Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton appeared before the House Select Committee on Benghazi this week. Is Congress any closer to discovering the truth of what happened and why? Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, a member of the committee, joins us. Also, Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas, held a presidential forum last weekend. Senior pastor of Prestonwood, Dr. Jack Graham, joins me to talk about why the church has not only a right, but a responsibility to be involved. And Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal joined me earlier this week after a federal judge temporarily stopped Louisiana from defunding Planned Parenthood. Governor Jindal talks Planned Parenthood and his new book, American Will, The Forgotten Choices That Changed Our Republic. That and more is coming up on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you, visit the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics. Also, you can sign up right there for my daily update and our email alerts that keep you informed on issues pertaining to faith, family, and freedom. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with us, at T. Perkins. All eyes were on Capitol Hill this week as the House Select Committee on Benghazi heard from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. As Congress continues in their efforts to get to the bottom of what happened in Benghazi, Libya, that left four Americans dead over 3 years ago. Joining me now is a member of the Select Committee, the representative from the 4th Congressional District of Ohio, Congressman Jim Jordan. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, good to be with you, Tony.
I know it was a long hearing you had this week with the former secretary. Any new information come out as a result of the hearing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the fact that Secretary Clinton was saying publicly that it was a video-inspired protest that was the catalyst for this terrible tragedy and attack in Benghazi, I think that was dispelled in many ways. We know for a fact that she talked to the Egyptian prime minister and told the Egyptian prime minister a very different thing than she was telling the American people. She told him, we know it was not the film, it was a pre-planned attack, not a protest. I mean, that's her words. So in private, she was saying one thing, but to the American people, she was saying something very different, blaming this video narrative. I think it was done for political reasons. I think they realized Libya was supposed to be their baby, their shining success story, and they were just 50-some days before an election, and so that influenced what they said. But I think that was one of the takeaways, at least, from the hearing.
And you made that point very well in the hearing. In fact, I have a clip of that when you brought those points out in the hearing, and I want to play that right now for our listeners.
You picked the video narrative. You picked the one with no evidence, and you did it because Libya was supposed to be, as Mr. Roskin pointed out, this great success story for the Obama White House and the Clinton State Department. And a key campaign theme that year was GM's alive, Bin Laden's dead, Al-Qaeda's on the run. And now you have a terrorist attack. And it's a terrorist attack in Libya. And it's just 56 days before an election. You can live with a protest about a video. That won't hurt you. But a terrorist attack will. So you can't be square with the American people. Tell your family it's a terrorist attack, but not the American people. You can tell the president of Libya it's a terrorist attack, but not the American people. And you can tell the Egyptian prime minister it's a terrorist attack, but you can't tell your own people the truth.
Congressman, how did she respond to that line of questioning?
Well, she tries to muddle it up, and it's funny because there's an email for some of her, the real experts, the folks in the Near Eastern Affairs Bureau, who are the experts on Libya, that says, don't conflate, we need to distinguish these. Benghazi was an attack. Cairo, of course, that was the video, and that was the protest, that was the demonstration. But Benghazi was an attack, but she tries to conflate it and muddy it all up. And again, I believe it was done for political reasons. So they realized that they couldn't have this kind of story. You know, you can survive politically a video-inspired protest that went bad, but when you have a campaign theme of Al-Qaeda's on the run, Bin Laden's dead, GM's alive, and that's one of your key campaign themes, and you're just 50-some days before an election, it's a different animal. And that's what they were trying to avoid, I think, and that's why they took the course they did.
I mean, but when you point out the fact that she had the conversations with other leaders and other nations about what
and
actually
her family.
Happened. Right.
And to her family, she said, it's been a tough day. We lost two of our people to a terrorist-like, Al-Qaeda-like group, that says a lot, too. So, again, different story, than what the American people get. And that's what bothers the American people. They want their public servants. They want their folks in government, their government, to give it to them square. And I don't think we got that from the administration back after that tragedy.
Well, Congressman Jordan, now, who was driving that narrative? Was this a team effort from the Obama administration, from the White House on down, or was the initiative taken here by the secretary?
Well, it started with her and the official statement the night of the attack, the 1008 statement, when she says she references inflammatory material posted on the Internet. But it was the administration as well, because we have on September 14th, Jay Carney saying that it wasn't a pre-planned attack. The very same day, we have the experts in Libya saying it was a well-planned attack, exactly the opposite on the same day. And, of course, on that day, September 14th, that's the same day that the now famous Talking Points memo comes out, where Ben Rhodes at the White House says, make sure you reference that this was caused by a video and wasn't a broader policy failure. The public message was completely different than the private message, and the private message, in my judgment, was the truth, and they weren't willing to tell it square.
All right, Congressman, to quote the secretary herself, what difference does it make? Why is Congress wanting to get to the bottom of this? What can be done?
That's our charge. That's our charge, and the American taxpayer deserves it. More importantly, the families of Ambassador Stevens and Sean Smith and Glenn Doherty and Tyrone Woods deserve the truth, and that's what we're focused on doing. It's a long, slow process. She's one of 50-some witnesses. There's more to come, and we'll keep digging.
So where do you go from here? What's next?
Well, we'll continue to look at them. We just got like 5,000 pages of emails from Chris Stevens. I mean, think about that. We're the first committee to get the ambassador himself, first committee to get his emails. So we just got those in the past week. So, you know, the Democrats like to talk about how long it's taken, but it would be nice if we get the information. We could go a lot faster and have the report written and hopefully provide some answers to the families and the taxpayers of this country.
What's the rationale for it taking so long to get that information to the committee?
Well, you know, go figure. This has been an administration that's, when it comes to getting documents relative to the IRS, when it comes to getting documents relative to all kinds of important issues for the American people, they drag their feet, they slow walk. It's just the way they operate, and it is frustrating.
I have to imagine that it is. Congressman Jim Jordan, thanks so much for joining us this weekend. As always, great to talk with you.
You bet, Tony. Take care. Thank you.
Folks, I mean, this is it's important that the leaders of our country tell the American people the truth. Now, I understand there are times when, for security purposes, we're not told everything, but we shouldn't be told a lie. And when Americans are attacked and killed because of potentially an administration not doing what they should have done, and because it doesn't fit a narrative that al-Qaeda was on the run, that we had defeated them, and that they were in retreat when in fact they were not, and now we see that very clearly 3 years later, an administration should not be allowed to lie to the people. This is unconscionable that we would have an administration willingly and intentionally lie. And Congress is right. I know it's been over 3 years. The history of this select committee, it was very hard to get. In fact, it was Congressman Frank Wolf, former Congressman Frank Wolf, he's now retired, who picked this effort up and began pushing it and pushing it. It worked with our own General Jerry Boykin to help convince the Speaker to do it. And to the Speaker's credit, he finally did do it. But we're still far from getting all the answers. All right, folks, you're listening to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're along with us this weekend. So don't go away. We're right back after these messages with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Fear not. If you've read the Bible, you've read those words. But have you ever paused to meditate upon their meaning? In almost every case where God spoke those words, it preceded something extraordinary being done through ordinary people. God told people like Abraham, Gideon, and the apostles to reject their fears because fear holds us back from experiencing all that God wants to do in us and through us. We can't operate in fear and in faith. Faith says advance, fear says retreat. Do you want to know how to live with no fear? That's the focus of my new book, No Fear: Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. You'll be inspired and hopefully challenged by the real-life stories of young people who are standing up for Jesus in an increasingly hostile culture. You'll also read the biblical accounts of those who stood for God in their day and learn how to stand in a way that honors Christ. Learn to live with a holy reverence for God, and you'll have no fear of man. For more information, go to TonyPerkins.com. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us this weekend. Well, last weekend, Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas, hosted a presidential forum in which about six of the Republican presidential candidates came, spoke to the people, answered questions. And quite frankly, I think it's time that the church reengage in this way. When you look at the primaries, Republican primary voters, about 50% of them are social conservatives, evangelicals, conservative Catholics. In the general elections, about a third. I think it's very important that these voters not only be engaged, but be informed. And one way to do it is when churches get more involved. Joining me now is the pastor, the senior pastor of Prestonwood Baptist Church, Dr. Jack Graham.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Well, congratulations on a great event last night. I applaud your efforts, and not having to get secondhand information, but look, invite the candidates who want to come and have a conversation right there into your church.
Exactly, it was a phenomenal event. We began at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It lasted till almost 7 o'clock, 3.5 hours. So it took a while. But we wanted to give every candidate an opportunity to speak individually and then to respond to questions, and they did that. They did it beautifully. All six candidates really nailed it. Warm reception in the room. I walked away saying, look, here are six we know, six who are capable, quite capable, in terms of their character, in terms of their commitment, vision, and certainly their qualifications as leaders, that quite capable of leading the country. And I know that there are others who weren't out there who have done the same. We invited everyone, including Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, so everyone was invited. It was a nonpartisan opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And 7,000 people were there, plus thousands more online. It was an amazing event. And one that we would do again, for sure, and I think needs to be repeated across the country.
100%. Now, I know you invited all the candidates. Did you put a little, down there at the bottom, a little asterisk to kind of tamp down any fears that there would be no baptisms following so they felt comfortable coming?
Well, we do a lot of baptisms at our church, and that is our primary mission. We're committed to being the church and fulfilling the Great Commission, reaching people for Christ and discipling them. And with that, we have a responsibility as Christians, and therefore I as a pastor and leader of our church, to engage in life.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that matter the most in life. And that includes, of course, those who lead us. And matters of faith and matters of freedom, matters of conscience.
Right.
We're deeply committed to that as well. So while, we're not going to turn Prestonwood, I don't think any church should be turned into a political machine. We do have a responsibility as Christians, as a church, to stand up, first of all, in a prophetic way in the community, in our culture, in the country. So the prophetic role to speak to both sides of the aisle, both parties, and tell people what we think according to God's word. And then also to find those people who best represent us who are going to lead the nation. This is, again, a matter of life and liberty for all of us.
Right, and this is, historically, this is a role the church has played. So, while some may say, oh, wait a minute, church is getting political. This is for up until 30, 40 years ago, primarily after the Johnson Amendment back in the 60s, the 50s, this was a key role that the church played. And you're just kind of moving it back into that train. I was telling somebody today about this, commented about it. I said, look, these issues that we're now told are political are inherently spiritual and moral issues, and who better to address them than the church?
I love that because it's so true. And right, we care about a lot of issues. Typically, of course, the progressives, the liberals, and a secular world thinks we only care about a few things. And certainly at the top of our list is the sanctity of life and the sacredness of marriage and family, and we care deeply about these, and we'll continue to let our voice be heard. I think there's a sense that we are winning the battle for life. We do need to keep fighting that. Along with that, we care deeply about religious liberty. And the very people who oppose us, they just, I presume, want us to go to our churches and huddle up, shut the doors, get behind stained glass windows, talk to each other, and never speak to the public square, which is exactly the opposite of what the Bible tells us to do.
Absolutely.
That we're to take our message, the message of the gospel, which has social implications and applications, that we're to take that message to the world. Religious liberty, we talked about that with the candidates last evening. All of them are concerned about it, as I know you are and I am. But we talked about protecting the country. Our families are at stake. We want to, the national security issues. We talked about issues of health and not health, but wealth and poverty. We're concerned about justice issues, and we talked about violence in the streets and how we can reconcile between races and the great divide and how we can unite America. All of those issues and more came up because Christians and people of faith, we care about our families, and most of all, we have a desire to see God's glory in the earth, and that includes our nation, and that faith would not be isolated. Ben Carson was very good on this last evening in talking about secularism and how we as believers are being put away out of sight, out of mind, if it was possible. But we won't go away, and evangelical voters are going to come out full force, full steam, ahead over the next 16 to 18 months.
Dr. Graham, thanks so much for being with us. Folks, I'm going to encourage you to visit the website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics and our guest. Also, tools that you can use to be more engaged. All right, don't go away. When we come back on the other side of this break, we're going to hear from Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, an interview I did with him earlier in the week.
Do you know a college student or recent graduate who is struggling with how Scripture should motivate our political action? In addition to learning about policy, politics, and legislation through their daily research assignments, FRC interns attend a weekly seminar entitled Standing Strong, Defending the Christian Worldview in Public Policy, a comprehensive tour de force of FRC's mission. Interns are challenged to defend their policy positions through mock scenarios such as a legislative hearing, a television interview, a city council meeting, or other policy areas. Issues such as the sanctity of life, marriage and family, religious liberty, education, bioethics, human sexuality, legislative lobbying, and judicial activism are discussed and explained in an exciting and practical way. If you know someone who would be interested in the FRC internship program, please direct them to our website, www.frc.org/internships, to fill out an application today.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad you're with us. Earlier in the week, I had a chance to visit with my home state governor, Governor Bobby Jindal, the day after a federal judge told Louisiana that they could not withhold tax dollars from Planned Parenthood. Now, it's a temporary injunction, but Governor Jindal visited with me about that and his new book. Here's the interview with Governor Jindal. Now, joining me now here on Washington Watch is the governor of my home state, Governor Bobby Jindal. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be on the air with you. Thank you for having me back.
Hey, before we get into to Planned Parenthood, I know I saw you this morning on Fox and Friends. You have a new book out called The American Will, The Forgotten Choices That Changed Our Republic. Tell our listeners quickly about that book.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's, we live in the greatest country in the history of the world, but it's not inevitable. At critical moments, extraordinary people made critical decisions. For example, Reagan taking on then-President Nixon, who wanted to federalize welfare. Or for those that are interested in religious liberty, a couple of examples, the role that Christian pastors had, and the Beecher family in particular, in terms of the abolition movement that ended slavery in our country, as well as, for example, other many forgotten moments where people of faith, people of incredible character, some famous, others not so famous, have made critical decisions that have led us to this great country. You remember the anti-federalists who so distrusted the new federal government, they led the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, even when that wasn't necessarily the prevailing view of the time. So the book is another look at American history, some forgotten moments, some incredible heroes from our nation's history. And it reminds us, not only are there echoes in the decisions and arguments we're having today, but in 2016, we have another one of those critical moments. And if we don't decide correctly, I fear we won't recognize the country we live in. The left is trying to take God out of the public sphere, trying to turn the American dream into the European nightmare of more and more government dependence. So it's another look at our history, but through some sometimes forgotten stories with practical lessons for today.
Well, Governor Jindal, I think there's just a little bit in there about you as well, and I think you're uniquely positioned to draw attention to these. Being a first-generation American, your folks came to this country less than a half a century ago to be a part of the American dream and become Americans, and they embraced American exceptionalism. And so you've had a chance to see that fresh and anew. It's not something that was stagnant or something that was just taken for granted in your family. Your family was attracted to this nation because of its exceptionalism.
Tony, that's exactly right. My parents, they came here on a plane. It was the first time they'd ever been on a plane. My mom was pregnant with me. They had never visited before. They were coming to an idea as much as they were coming to a place. The idea of freedom and opportunity. And you know what? They were absolutely coming here to be Americans. I'm tired of the hyphenated Americans. They're not Indian Americans or Asian Americans. We're all Americans. And they didn't come here to be dependent on government. They came here very much to work hard, to make their own way. And they taught, here's the difference between my dad, one of the differences between my dad and the president. My dad, one of nine, grew up in a house without electricity, without running water, the only one to get past the fifth grade. He has never resented other people's success. He doesn't say government owes me. He doesn't say he's a victim. He's not for redistribution. Unlike President Obama, what he says is, if somebody does well in this country, good for them. That just shows what we can do, because we have the freedom to work hard and do great things in America. So you're exactly right. I never take this country for granted, but I also know it's not inevitable. Reagan reminded us we're only a generation away from losing these freedoms. He reminded us we were a shining city on a hill, but he reminded us also we have got to make those decisions for ourselves. And I think this is a critical moment in history. I think this president has done more damage in 7 years than I thought possible. Look, the Democrats are debating during the presidential debate. Tony, they're debating socialism. They're literally debating, you know, spending trillions of dollars more when we can't afford the government we've got today. You almost can't make up. It's controversial in the Democratic primary to say all lives matter. It is controversial in the Democratic primary to say that we should defund Planned Parenthood, that we should stand for innocent human life. That's how far we've come as a country.
Talking about embracing children, the blessing that children are, you know, you have not been shy about your pro-life views. And when this story broke about Planned Parenthood and the videos came out about what they were doing in trafficking and baby body parts, you began to look into what they were doing here in or doing in the state of Louisiana. And you instructed, once you found out that they were operating in a questionable manner, you said, all right, no more of our Medicaid dollars are going to go to Planned Parenthood. That's now been challenged in court. What's the future of that?
Well, Tony, they can send every attorney they can find in D.C. They're not going to intimidate us. This is what happened. We launched an investigation after the first video, invited Texas, the FBI, to join us. After the second other videos came out, we did cancel their contracts. We don't want any taxpayer dollars going to this group. They sued us. The Obama administration sued us in federal court. He can't watch the videos, but he has time to send his attorneys to Baton Rouge. They can send the entire Department of Justice. We won't be intimidated from defending innocent human life. But look, anybody that's paid attention knows with this administration, if you stand up for our rights, you'll end up in court. We had to go to federal court. We had to win our appeal for things like school choice and education reform policies. We had to go to federal court over Common Core. We've had to go to federal court against the EPA over the excessive regulations, trying to regulate water in our backyard, our CO2 that we, you know, our power plants. We've had to fight for our rights. This is an administration who does not believe in the 10th Amendment. They want us to go away. And there are too many Republicans that don't want this fight. They're just saying, oh, we can't do anything about this. I was thrilled to see Texas follow our example yesterday. I want to see every state. Look, they can't come after every governor. We have 31 Republican governors. If just the Republican governors would all do this, tell you, they can't come after us all. Let's fight for our rights. The left fights. They force socialism down our throats. Why won't we fight for pro-life, for conservative principles? This is an opportunity for us to fight for our beliefs.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by my home state governor, governor of my home state, Governor Bobby Jindal, talking about the effort to defund Planned Parenthood. And Governor, I mean, look, Louisiana is the most pro-life state in the nation, and that's not our own bragging about our state. That's just the record. And that's been, Louisiana's long been a pro-life state. You've taken it to the next level under your administration. But this is even different in that what we're seeing with Planned Parenthood is that we're forcing taxpayers to be a party to something that, as we've now seen, we've pulled back the curtain through these videos, that this is unconscionable. This is indefensible what they're doing.
Tony, that's a great point. I am pro-life. You're pro-life. I suspect most of your listeners are pro-life. Even folks that are not yet pro-life, I think, should be offended by these videos. They get over $500 million of our taxpayer dollars. Whether you're pro-life or not, it is barbaric what is being depicted and described on these videos. What we've simply said is, look, they operate two clinics in Louisiana. There are hundreds of other health care providers that can provide the other services without providing abortion. So that anybody that, you know, the left tries to make this an argument about other health care services, and that's nonsense. There are hundreds of doctors, local clinics, and other places men and women can go to get their cancer screenings or other preventative health care. They don't have to go to Planned Parenthood. At the very least, they shouldn't get our taxpayer dollars. I would go further. I would investigate them. I said this during the debates, that they better hope Secretary Clinton wins, because under a President Jindal, the DOJ, the IRS, and every other federal agency will come and investigate them. Now, the left hated that. They came after me and said, well, you can't do that. I said, watch me. And we'll send OSHA and EPA while we're at it. We'll send everybody we can. It is barbaric. And I think there's nowhere left for them to hide, which is why they're trying to change the topic. They don't want to talk about those videos. And instead, the Obama administration is trying to attack, the left is trying to attack the people who made the videos, governors that stand up to them, because they don't want to talk about what was actually described in those videos.
Again, that was Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. And I once again want to refer you to our website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics. You can also find out more information about Washington Watch and the Family Research Council. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6. He says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.